We'll ask for your prayers this morning. The Lord bless his word to us. I am thankful, as we sang, to be part of the family of God. I count it a privilege and a blessing. Another song says, I have a good home in the fold of my Lord, where sanctified children all dwell. I'm thankful to be one of you, and I want to go to heaven with you. Like to consider, written on the board, resisting the devil, something that will be imperative, a must for every one of us if we're going to be successful. If we're going to be able, and as I'm sure every one of our determination is, I want to go to heaven. I want to be successful in my walk with the Lord. We're going to have to be able to do this. We're going to have to resist the enemy, the devil, the adversary, the accuser of the brethren, the one that this Jesus said is out to do but one thing, to steal, to kill, and to destroy. That's his purpose. That's his intent. That's everything that he sets about to do in his planning of our life. In his planning of the things that he's going to introduce, the thoughts and the temptations and the feelings of however harmless they may seem at the time. If the devil's got his hands in it, the devil's in the details. There's a purpose behind it to be able to accomplish that very thing of destruction. Remember a time, well, I don't remember a time, I remember read about a time, and we've heard about the time in the years leading up to World War II, that war that forever made an imprint on history and on our minds and our country. The years leading up to World War II, things weren't as apparent as they were in the early 1940s. The 1930s and the late 20s, Germany was a country that was in having some economic difficulties, and there rose a man that had charisma and strength, and he had a vision, and he had things to say that inspired people, that we can be a strong nation again, that we can rise again from the ashes, so to speak, and we can rebuild to be a strong nation. But he added that we will go about it by only legal means. We don't have anything nefarious in mind. We're not setting about to overcome the world. We're just trying to rebuild to be a strong nation again. But there was a man, I'm sure there were others, but there was one man in particular that history records was very skeptical of this. His name was Winston Churchill. And he didn't gain many followers at that time. There weren't a whole lot of people that paid heed to the things that he was warning. But he began to say, I don't believe the man. I don't believe what Adolf Hitler is saying. I hear what he's saying about we're just rebuilding internally to just be a strong nation. But he said the man has something else in mind. The man's not going to stop there. And the world looking on wasn't willing to step in and do something at that point in time. You know, it would have been much easier to deal with early on if they would have acknowledged and recognized there's an element at work here that needs to be nipped in the bud, that we need to deal with and address before it grows so strong that we can't. Well, so time went on. And we know what happened in Germany. We know that they did indeed rebuild to be a strong nation. But an underlying intent, the real motive, began to be seen once that strength was manifested. Whenever they were the underdog, whenever they were an underling among European nations, they couldn't rise up and declare what their purposes were or what this man's purpose was. But once they gained a foothold, once they had developed such a strength, they had something then to back up their motives. The enemy, if we allow him a foothold, if we allow the enemy to get in and gain just a foothold, the song sin will take you further. Says so with pleasure and promises. Sin took control. That's the way the enemy always comes in, with promises and pleasure and innocency and oh Eve, just look at this. Isn't that pleasant looking fruit? Isn't that something that's to be desired? Well, you know what the result of this is going to be, Eve? You're going to have wisdom. There's something here that just seems so harmless. And it happens to coincide exactly with what my flesh wants to do. You know, that should always be a warning sign for us. The enemy is not, although he can make himself out to be an angel of light, he can transform himself into something that says, I'm just doing this for your own good, for your own pleasures. This is something that's innocent and that's harmless. But you take something that's seemingly harmless in its infancy. If it bears within it the seed of corruption, it'll grow up to be something that is much stronger and much more evil, because the seed is there. The potential is there. The one that planted it is the enemy of our souls, and it bears his seed of corruption. So the warnings were largely ignored. France, who was confident in their strength, who at one time said that Germany's army was no match for their own, in 1940, faced the fire and fury of what was known as Blitzkrieg, lightning war. When Germany came in and unleashed all of the power that they had been building up, that they had been strengthening themselves with, and they hit with everything they had. And France found themselves retreating. The Allies found themselves retreating. As Germany went in and conquered France. But even at that point in time, they made an agreement that we'll still allow a form of mixed government here. You see, we're not entirely just coming in to overtake you, but we'll come to an agreement here and we can work together here in this. And you can have some influence in this government, and we'll have some influence in this. The easiest thing for you to do then, and it's the purpose of Blitzkrieg, to come in with such an overwhelming show of force that it seems like the best thing to do is just surrender. What do you want? What do you need? What are the conditions of peace? Then it would be much easier to do that, especially if the aggressor has promises that you can still work with us and we'll still allow you to have your way of life, but we also want to have a say here. And this is the way the enemy works. The enemy wants to come in and say, I just want this, to carve out this little piece of real estate right over here. You can have all the rest of the land. I just want this right here. And oh, by the way, if you don't give it to me, and all the threats that the enemy brings. So it can seem much easier to just say, okay, it's just one little thing here. I'll give this little area up. I can still control the rest of it. But the enemy, may we never underestimate the power of the enemy. Because if I determine in my own strength, the enemy's forces are no match for my own. Take heed. He that thinks he stands, lest he fall. Because in our strength, we are no match for the enemy. We are no match for the power and the might of the enemy. He can transform himself one day into an angel of light that wants to come and talk peacefully with us, that wants to come and offer conditions and offer things to us. But the next day, he can turn around with all the fire and fury that he has. And if I'm not in the place that I need to be, If I've been at the negotiating table with the devil, if I've been giving him a little bit of ground here and a little bit of ground there, when the devil does unleash his fury, when the devil does decide to launch his attack against me, I'll find myself completely defenseless, that I'm not able to stand up, that I thought I was strong, but I just found out I'm nothing. The enemy just ran over me. What happened? As many of those citizens no doubt were asking, even at that time, what just happened? Well, I'd like to look at 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, to begin. First Peter chapter 5, looking at the 8th verse, 1 Peter 5 and 8, warns us to be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Several things that I believe it behooves us to get a hold of out of the scripture. Be sober, be vigilant, be on your guard. This is not the time for us to be drowsy. It's high time that we awake out of sleep if we find ourselves in a drowsy condition spiritually. That I'm not really watchful, that my spiritual senses are not developed to watch. My eyes spiritually are not trained to look for the enemy, to recognize what the movement in the bush means, to recognize what the sound in the night means. Watchmen, what of the night? What are you able to see in your life and in my life? Because the devil has not gone off on vacation somewhere. If for a season we don't feel the fury of the devil's wrath, be assured, as I believe it was Ahab at the time was warned, they had won a victory against the enemy and he retreated. But the prophet told him, take heed unto yourself. Go and strengthen thyself. Because of the return of the next season, he'll be back. We can know that the enemy isn't very far off. And what I'm saying here this morning, I don't want to be something that sounds like we're just defeated before the battle even started. But I want us to recognize the devil that we're up against. Be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary. You know, it's so important in battle to recognize who the adversary is. It's so important to understand. And there were times when warfare was different. If you had the redcoats, as they were called, coming in, you knew them. You knew who the enemy was. But you know, we live in a time today, even modern literal warfare is different. They hide. They disguise themselves in the crowds and blow themselves up. They don't wear a uniform that says, I'm a terrorist. Warfare has changed. And you know, the enemy changes his tactics sometimes as well. That instead of it appearing as such a black and white matter of good and evil, the enemy comes in some gray areas and tries to work. May God help us to recognize who the adversary is. The adversary is not that boss that's a thorn in the flesh. The adversary is not the neighbors that are always causing me trouble. It's not my brother or sister in the congregation that I have tension with. The adversary of every one of us this morning is the devil. The one that is a liar from the beginning of time, that is intent on destroying every one of us. So God help us to recognize who the adversary is. Your adversary, the devil, walketh about. He's not idle. He's not off somewhere. He's given up on his office or the things that he does. Whenever the devil appeared before God in the book of Job, and he said, "What? Where have you been? What have you been doing? I don't know how all that took place. I don't understand all that necessarily, but there is a dialogue between God and the devil." And he said, I've been walking to and fro throughout the face of the whole earth. You know, the enemy is always active. The enemy is always at work. He's always watching for opportunities. The enemy is always watching for weaknesses, and the enemy knows us. The enemy knows who we are. The enemy knows the things that we like. He knows our appetites. He knows our desires. He knows our weaknesses. Sounds like a pretty formidable foe, doesn't it? It sounds like an enemy that is to be reckoned with. Not one that's to be taken lightly. Not one that is to be underestimated, as the British came over to the colonies to a ragtag group of people that didn't even have uniforms and boots that matched and didn't have any kind of organization, and they ought to be easy to whoop. Don't underestimate the enemy. Don't underestimate his determination to fight. And so with the enemy of our soul, is a very determined foe. He's not going to give up easily. He's not going to go away and say, well, when you hit 50 years old, when you hit your 30th anniversary of being saved, then I'll consider that a battle won. The victory, the final victory to be won. The enemy all the way up to the last breath is going to be fighting and opposing and trying his best to destroy. So it says here, the warning. You hear that and you look at the devil and what he is. The devil wants the reaction within us to be, I can't do it. I might as well go ahead and surrender. I can't face a foe like that. And whenever he comes with all his threatenings and all his blasts against us, I can't stand against that. I might as well go ahead and devil, let's talk. Let's see if we can come to an agreement on this. But the instruction here is, against this devil as a roaring lion that goes about seeking whom he may devour. What does the next verse say? Who go and surrender, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. This battle is not a one man or a one woman battle. We're not the only ones that are facing the enemy. Elijah felt that way a little bit, didn't he? I'm the only one left. Lord, go ahead and take my life. No, you're not. There are 7,000 others beside that are facing the devil as well, that are facing the pressures and the trials and the tribulations that you're facing. So get up. There's a battle to fight. Get up. There's work to be done. Even though Germany invaded very quickly, in a matter, I believe it was of around 6 weeks, that they were able to come in and conquer a very strong European nation. There were some within that said, no, we're not going to sit back. And I'm not, you know better, that I'm not advocating violent resistance in the flesh. What I'm advocating this morning is violent resistance in the spirit against the enemy. The violent are going to take it by force. Not going to take it by just sitting by idly and wishing that it would happen. I'm going to have a determination inside me that I'm willing to take this thing by force. So there were some within France that said, we're not going to stand by and watch this happen. And they formed what was known as the resistance. The French resistance movement, that even though the Axis powers had overrun the country, and as their grip got stronger and stronger, it inspired more and more people to join the resistance movement, the underground resistance. And they would come in and they would try in every way that they could to disrupt communication, to stop the supply lines, to cause havoc anywhere that they could to disrupt what the enemy was trying to do. Not only that, but they would provide intelligence back to the Allied troops that was very valuable in being able to turn the tide of the war. Because there were those that hazarded their life to say, no, I'm not going to stand by. I'm not going to allow the devil to just run over me. You ever felt like the devil was just trying to run right over you? Steamroll you? He'll do that. I'd like to look now. King Hezekiah. Start in 2 Chronicles 32. Chapter of 2 Chronicles. Beginning in the second verse, when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib was come, and that he was purposed to fight against Jerusalem, he took counsel with his princes and his mighty men to stop the waters of the fountain which were without the city, and they did help him. So there was gathered much people together, who stopped all the fountains and the brook that ran through the midst of the land, saying, why should the kings of Assyria come and find much water? So as the king and the troops of Assyria came and gathered themselves together, they were a very powerful fighting force. They had won many victories, and now their time came. Whenever they had come up against Judah here, and they gathered themselves together, and they said, we're not going to make this easy for the enemy. Let's go stop the water. Why should they come and find nice fresh water to drink? We're going to resist what the enemy is trying to do. And so they did that. It said he strengthened himself. They built up the wall that was broken and raised it up to the towers. Another wall without and repaired it. You know the time for the walls to be strong? It's before the battle starts. You know what? When the enemy is trying to pour over the walls to say, I got to rebuild something here. Walls are given for a purpose, for a reason. You look at the old cities in the Old Testament that most of the time had a wall that was erected around them for protection. Oh, that's a whole other message. But the Lord has walls of protection that he wants to build around us. That's a bulwark to us. That's a protection for us against the influences and the pressures of the world that would try to crowd in around us. Walls of salvation roundabout. Will he appoint for walls and bulwarks unto us? May the Lord help us that we keep the walls in good repair. We not allow them to fall to disrepair and to begin to crumble. They were in a place here that the walls needed some repair. When they saw the enemy coming, they did the right thing. If the wall is in disrepair and you see the enemy coming, it's better to go ahead and have it fixed. But you better do something about it now, before the enemy's at the wall. And so they repaired the wall and they strengthened themselves, and he set captains of the people and began to gather them together, and he began to speak comfortably unto them. And he said, verse 7, be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him. For there be more with us than with him. You remember who else said that? Wasn't it Elisha? Whenever his servant looked out and was so frightful, and he said, Master, look, they're all gathered around, and don't fear. Those that be with us are more than they that... What do you mean? There's just a few of us. And he said, Lord, open his eyes. Open his eyes, Lord, to see the real battle that's at work. I want to encourage us this morning that whenever the battle gets hot, that the Lord would help us to open our eyes and realize that we don't have to surrender, that we don't have to just lay down and say, all right, Lord, whenever it feels like I'm all alone, whenever it feels like I'm the only one left standing and I don't see how I can do it, Lord, help my eyes to be open. That I can pray when I'm in the battle, when the battle gets hot, Lord, open my eyes to realize the angel of the Lord encamps round about them that fear him and does what? He delivers them. That's what the angel of the Lord does. If we will, and we have a part to play, if I'll resist steadfast in the faith, if I'll stand firm and true, whenever I have a decision to make, no, I'm not going to surrender. I'm not going to bow down to the idols. Even if the Lord doesn't deliver me, I'm not bowing down. I've got it set. I've got it settled in my heart. The word resist means to stand against, to oppose, to set oneself against. You know, we're going to have to set ourselves set our position that I'm planting my feet here and I'm not backing down by the grace and the help of God. I'm not going to surrender. I'm not going to go back. Do we have that purpose this morning? Do we have that determination? Because the devil's going to try it. The devil's going to come along and he's going to try your resolve. How seriously do you mean it? How badly do you want to keep this? You know the enemy knows that he's a defeated foe. He doesn't act like it sometimes. But the enemy knows that he's defeated. But he wants us to forget that. He wants to come in with all the roaring that the lion does and cause us to tremble and shake and forget that I'm on the winning side and that I don't have to bow down. So we read of him talking to them, be strong, be courageous, don't be dismayed. There's more with us. You don't have to fear and tremble, because with him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. And sure enough, the Lord gave them the victory. You know, that sounds like Hezekiah. He did just the right thing. He was strong. He was firm. He didn't surrender and lay down arms. He reassured the people. You know, that's not the only battle that Hezekiah faced, and that's not the only way that he ever reacted in his life. You can read in 2 Kings, the 18th chapter. Maybe we won't read it all for the sake of time. But the Assyrians were at it again. They had come up against the people there, against Judah, and they had already won, already gone against Lachish and gone against other cities and people and nations and had conquered them. And they had come up now against Judah, and they began to speak unto Judah and try to bring fear to them and cause them to surrender. Verse 28 of 2 Kings 18, Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language and spake, hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand, neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us, and this city shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Hearken now not to Hezekiah. For thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and then eat ye every man of his own vine. Just go ahead and surrender. I'm going to go directly to the people now. Go ahead and just surrender, because there's no way that you're going to win the victory. There's no way that you can stand. Don't let Hezekiah deceive you. I'm going to come in now and try to bring question to your mind. What I've always heard. Well, is it really true? Well, is the Lord really able to? And he began to try to undermine the word of Hezekiah. But you can read here in of Hezekiah, whenever he heard that they were gone up against Lachish, that he sent to them, and he sent a message. And the message said, read this in verse 14, I have offended. Return from me. That which thou puttest on me, I will bear. Listen, I want to be a peacemaker here, enemy. Let's talk about this. You're being aggressive here. Let's see if we can come to an agreement for you to give peace to us. Well, the enemy was interested in that. Sure, let's talk. And he came and Hezekiah told him, whatever you tell me, I'm willing to bear. And so he told him what he wanted. A couple of instances. He told him he wanted money. He told him an amount that it was apparently so much that he had to go, and you can read where he went and stripped the gold off the doors of the temple to pay the ransom, to pay the price. You know, when you start dealing with the devil, it's always going to bankrupt you. It's always going to strip the door gold off the doors of the temple. The things that beautify me spiritually, of a spirit, it's going to cost us whenever we deal with the devil. Whenever we don't resist the devil steadfast. Well, maybe I can't stand up. So let's go ahead and let's see if we can find some middle ground here. There is no middle ground with the devil. The devil's looking for an opportunity. He's pushing. Looking for where he can find weakness. You ever been in the dentist chair and he goes poking around and I hate that. When he goes poking around, he's looking for a place of deadness. Looking for a soft spot where there's some decay. You know, the enemy's gonna poke around in your life and my life. The enemy's looking for some areas of decay. He's looking for a place of softness, and whenever he pushes it, it moves. And that's the very place that now we're gonna concentrate our power to try to overcome and make a breach in the wall. So he demanded the gold, and then he came back again. He said, now I want pledges. I want you to give people up now to satisfy me. The devil's demands always grow more and more and more. We can't deal with them. The only thing we can do with the devil is resist him. Whom resist steadfast. I'm not giving up. No. Say, no, I'm not going to take that offer. No, I'm not going to meet you there. Nehemiah, whenever they were rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, and old Sambalat came up against them and said, come and let's talk together now. Come down into the valley and let's meet and talk. He said, no, I don't have time for that. Don't have time to meet and talk with you. We've got a mission that we're about. We're rebuilding the walls here. We don't have time to deal with the devil. We don't have time to negotiate with him. We've got to resist the devil steadfast. That old roaring lion that wants to destroy and strike fear in our hearts. And oh, what a roar he can let out. You know, I was in India last time. They were telling me about going deeper into the forest, as we're hoping to do at some point. They were warning us, so there are elephants, there are tigers. With the elephants, you can scream and make a lot of noise and try to distract him, but he never did tell me what to do about tigers, if a tiger comes at you. So I had researched a little bit later, and the prospects don't sound very good. If a tiger looks like he's intent on attacking you, it's about over. But they did say the best chance that you have, never run. Never turn around and run, because that's just inviting him to take off after you. The thing that you've got to do is stand your ground. Raise yourself up and stand as tall as you can. Now, I want you to envision, if you're walking through the forest and you see a lion or a tiger jump out in front of you, crouch down, ready to pounce, and you hear that earth-trembling roar come out from his mouth. Are there any of you that feel like right then standing up real strong and saying, who are you? Any of you that feel like standing up real strong and I'm ready to face you down? That's not what our instinct is to do. We want to turn and hightail it out of there as fast as we can, but that's not what you do with a tiger. That's not what we do with the enemy. It's not what we do with a roaring lion. You resist him steadfast. Not giving in. Not surrendering. Not turning around and going the other way in fear. That only invites the enemy to give chase. Remember in Pilgrim's Progress, whenever Christian had entered one place and he heard the roar of the lions and he was so fearful of them, and he heard a voice at the gate saying, come on in. They're chained. They can't hurt you. Folks, the enemy has been defeated. The enemy has been conquered. We don't have to back into a corner. We're not the underdogs here. We don't have to, if the Lord's with us, if God be for us, we don't have to back off into a corner and trembling and say, devil, what do you want? What do I need to do, devil, to get you to give me a little breathing room here? Don't have to do it. Whom resists steadfast in the faith? Like to look at Ephesians chapter 6. This is easier said than done. The enemy's got a loud roar, and he can come in with a lot of fury. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 13 says, "Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness." I can remember a couple different people and battles of affliction that they went through here in the congregation, and Sister Karen, it seems like you've done everything you know to do. You've prayed every prayer you know to pray. You've cried out to the Lord for relief to come in to intervene. Lord, what do we do? Having done all to stand, having done everything that you know to do, it's not time to say, "Well, I tried to stand and it didn't work, so I'm running." But it's time to, having done everything you can to stand, keep on standing. Having done it, don't back down. Don't surrender. Don't give in, because in due season, you shall reap if you faint not. If you resist Him steadfastly, even when it feels like I can't resist any longer, set yourself against the devil. Meekly hold the true position, standing firm. This is a preparation. He said, here's how you prepare yourself for the battle. You don't gauge your readiness for warfare in peace entirely. It's the time to get ready. It's a scripture that says, if you faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is small. That's when your strength is put to the test. It's not when everything is going well and the seas are calm and then there's no trouble that I say, you know, I'm feeling really strong. I feel like I'm ready for anything. I got the world by the tail and how quickly the world can turn. And all of a sudden I find myself, I don't have the strength I thought I had. This is saying, get ready. That whenever the evil day comes, that you might be able to resist, that you might be able to stand against that day. It tells me that I could be in a place that I'm not able to stand. I could get into a place that I haven't taken on the whole armor of God. Jesus warned Peter in preparation for what was coming. Peter, now's the time, adding my words, now's the time, Peter, to watch and pray that you don't enter into temptation. What does 1 Corinthians 10 and 13 say? There's no temptation taking you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will with the temptation also make a way to escape. It's a promise that every one of us can latch hold of. This temptation, as hot and as fierce as it might feel right now, the Lord has made a way for me to escape. If I'm willing to take the way of escape, if I'm willing to stand fast against the devil, we can't give him any room. We can't give him, another place says, neither give place to the devil. Don't give any place to him. Don't give any ground to him, because I can invite the enemy into a point in my life that I'm not able to stand. I can find, for instance, such pleasure in the things of the world, in listening to them sing about it and watching them act out the things of the flesh and fleshly kind of living. I can feed myself on that to a point that when the battle comes and I'm doing all right, things are going all right, but all of a sudden this evil day that we read about, the evil day comes. All of a sudden I'm hit in the face with the temptation of the enemy. All of a sudden, full force, I'm right in the battle. Where did this come from? And I've been feeding the flesh. I haven't been arming myself with the armor of God. And all of a sudden, I'm not able. I don't have the strength. Folks, it's only God within us that will enable us to stand in the evil day. That same Winston Churchill is famous for saying, later in the war, in the bombing of Britain, when it was relentless month after month and night after night, bombing of the city of London, you remember him saying, or reading of him saying, never give in. Never, 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 never give in. Never give in to the seemingly overwhelming force or might of the enemy. Never give in. That was his philosophy, and it was what keep calm and carry on. It's what he continued reminding the people. Now's not the time to give up. It doesn't matter how long the battle gets. It doesn't matter how hot it gets. Don't give up. Giving up is not an option. And I trust this morning that for every one of us, giving up is not an option. Going back is not an option. Turning around and waving the white flag is not an option. Lord, I mean to go right on. I heard us. We sang that song this morning. I mean to go right on. Are we purposed and determined? Because the devil's going to come along and he's going to test that determination. He's going to bring temptation our way that tests our resolve. Sometimes through blitzkrieg. He hits us hard and fast, and other times by a long protracted siege where the enemy tries to just wear us down to the point that I just don't have the will in me to fight anymore. May the Lord help us to never, never, never give in. I'd like to close in the book of James. James chapter 4, verse 6. But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. There's another promise for us to arm ourselves with. Resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Stand firm. Set yourselves. Does it say in the first 30 seconds of taking a stand, no devil, I'm not, that he's gone? Sometimes you gotta stand for a while. Sometimes you gotta say no over and over and over. I'm not giving in. I'm not listening. No, I'm not me. I'm not negotiating. Stand firm. Resist the devil. Set yourselves against the devil. That we not be as those that just capitulate or those that just say, all right, it's too much. It's too much. I'll give in. There's no use standing up. As they say, resistance is futile. So I'm not even going to try fighting in this one, but that we stand firm. But there's another requirement. There's another element in this recipe. It says, submit yourselves to God. Because I can't fight this alone. I can stand and I can say over and over, I resist you, I rebuke you. But if I haven't submitted myself in my life to the authority of God in my life and in my heart, submitting myself in obedience to His ways and walking in His ways and walking after the Spirit, I'm on my own. And if I'm on my own, I have no hope of being able to stand against the devil. I can say resist you, rebuke you, and whatever combination, all I want. What is the man that heard Peter and them that would cast out the devils and he went and tried it? Peter I know and Jesus I know, or Paul, whoever it was that said, but who are you? It's not in the words that you say. It's not in just standing and saying, I rebuke, I resist. But there's a submission to God. There's a turning our will over to Him. Lord, I'm not going that way. Lord, I'm not going back. Whatever it takes, Lord, I mean to go right on. Lord, I want Your ways. If there's a place, Lord, in my life that I'm empowering the devil, if there's a place that I'm giving him a foothold to attack me from, Lord, I'm willing to deal with that. If there's a place that he's already gotten a stronghold in my life, Lord, by Your help and by Your grace, I'm willing to use the weapons of my warfare, which are mighty through God, to the pulling down of those strongholds, Lord. I'm willing to do warfare, whatever it takes, to gain the victory here. Submit yourself to God. And then you're in a position to have the authority and the backing of God to say, now I rebuke you in Jesus' name. And He'll flee. He has no choice. He may stand for a while. We may be in the battle for a while. But as they say, I've read the back of the book and I know how it ends. It ends in victory. It ends in success For all those who are willing to resist the might of the enemy, prophecy in Isaiah 25:4 said that, speaking of Jesus, that he'd be a shadow for us against the heat. He'd be a refuge for us whenever the blast of the terrible ones is as a rage or a storm against the wall, something like that. He said that there'll be a place in Christ. No matter the overwhelming, seemingly overwhelming force that I'm facing, no matter how strong the temptation may seem, there's a refuge. There's a way to escape. God's ensured it to be so because he hasn't set us on this journey that's a journey of defeat, but he has a way of victory. And so he said, when the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord will lift up a standard. The Lord knows how much I'm able to take. The Lord knows what the enemy has, and he knows what I'm able to withstand, and he has the grace. He giveth more grace. This morning, do you need more grace? Do we need more grace in the face of the battle? Divine intervention and influence on the heart. Grace. To be able to stand. Because I don't have it within myself. I need that grace of God to be able to resist the devil. You pray for me. May God bless. Amen.